This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio this morning is Philip C. It is just gone past 6 a.m. Thursday. We're almost there, guys.
Happy Junior Friday.
Happy Junior Friday, 4th of March. And as usual, it's an interesting day, and it's because it's going to be very soon, because next week, in conjunction with International Women's Day, BFM will be celebrating the tremendous efforts by women and girls in shaping a more equal future and recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. So we'll also be highlighting women in power, women in sports, in technology, and other perceived male-dominated industries and their central contribution to the nation. So join us all day on Monday, the 8th of March, for our International Women's Day special on BFM 89.9, obviously.
I think there are some countries where women is Women Month.
Yes.
The full month is about celebrating women.
Well, considering all the things we do, you couldn't fit it in one day, Philip. It's true.
I don't disagree.
You don't disagree, right? But what interesting stories do we have today?
Well, we're going to talk about doom scrolling.
Guilty as charged.
I think so.
To the point where I can't sleep and I need to learn how to stop doing it. And it's an addiction almost.
I think older people have this affliction as well.
Thank you, Philip. You just called me an old person. But in the meantime, I'll also be asking you, what do you miss most in this COVID-19 era? And you'll be surprised. It's not something that you think about so much, but clearly you can't do as much as you used to do.
You're getting a bit of skin hunger.
A little bit. But as usual, do let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in just a few moments. But first, here's The Bandit by Kings of Leon. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was The Bandit by Kings of Leon. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and I'm joined by Philip C. today. It has just gone past 6:06 in the morning, and we are looking right in front of us at this article by The Guardian, and it's entitled, The Power of Touch. Is this the sense we've missed most?
For me, it has. I really missed that sense of touch. We were just talking early on about, you know, how people connect and show their love, right? And I'm sure you've heard this term, love languages, before. For some people, it's touch. For some, it's quality time.
I was joking, mine was money.
I know. That doesn't exist. Just to inform our listeners, that isn't a love language.
And that was a joke, by the way. Yeah, it was a joke.
Just to be clear. So the five love languages, one was quality time, one was acts of service, one was giving gifts, one was saying words, and the last was touch, physical touch.
Yeah, and I think we were trying to decide, like, for each team member on the show, what is their love language, right?
Right.
Did any of us get touch? No, right?
I don't think so.
No, but no. I think it is... It does draw attention to the fact that what have we given up in COVID-19? And you think, okay, I've given up travel. I've given up eating out as much as I have. I've given up hanging out in malls. I've given up maybe not seeing my friends as frequently. And yes, everybody has given up. People have given up salaries because they've been unfortunately let go, or they've had pay deferments, given up luxuries because they've had to cut back. I mean, those are all realities. Kids have had to give up school. But there's one sense that we have really given up, and that's the sense of touch. Because in this COVID-19 era, the fight to flatten the curve is all about physical distancing, right?
Absolutely.
Because the way to prevent an infection is to make sure that you don't pass it on to someone to catch it. And unfortunately, with that means you've got to keep 1 meter away. Unless you're talking about your very, very small circle that you see every day.
I really miss the basic things like just a handshake. You know, so like just meeting new people, I used to, when a handshake, kind of get a gist of that person.
Yeah, it's that snap connection,
right? Snap connection. So whether the hands are clammy or not, whether the hands are firm or soft, whether they've actually looked after their hands in the first place, gives you a good sense.
By the way, there are some politicians out there who have the smoothest, softest hands in the world. Yeah, but let's not mention who they are.
We should go which spy massages they go for.
It's really, really like, oh, these people have never washed a plate in their life. But the point is, you're right. These are the things that they are part of that human connection. Absolutely. And I think COVID-19 is not only just the handshake that we're missing, because we're all masked up. the facial expressions also, you know, you don't see, you only see the eyes. Although now I think we're getting better at it, and I can even recognize people with their mask on. And I think we all, after a while, we learn this. But you're right, I still miss touch.
I do. And you know, think about it, when you were born, right? The first emotional connection is for a baby is touch.
Yes.
When they touch. Now, I want to give a shout out to this guy called Aristotle.
He considered
some philosopher.
Yeah, like, Greek philosopher. Whatever.
He considered touch the lowliest sense. He looked down on it because it was found in all animals and it relied on mere proximity, not the higher human faculties of thought, memory, and imagination. To me, bah humbug.
So atas, right?
Man.
Yeah. So atas. But I think, you know, when you think about it, it's such a fundamental thing to reach out and almost kind of make that connection. So sadly, it's not going to happen. And you know what, Anthony Fauci, the famous doctor in US, okay, the one spearheading the COVID-19 fight.
The special advisor, I think, to the administration.
Do you know, he said that even post-vaccination, post-COVID world where there's herd immunity, he's not going back to handshakes anymore.
Oh, so he's going to like the Malaysian tourism where you put your hands on your
I don't
heart
think he'll do that.
Down?
But he just thinks that because of infections and the possibility of, you know, catching something, I think COVID-19 has drawn a kind of, unfortunately, a little spotlight on how diseases get spread. And for him, he's not going back to touch, you know, shaking hands ever again.
Well,
so are we going to lose something from COVID-19? Are we all going to have this inherent worry about touch?
I really hope not. But you can see that transpiring into the digital sphere already, where there are emojis about hugs, right? Sending hugs over to you.
Fist bumps.
Fist bumps.
No, elbow bumps.
Elbow bumps. And there are all these ways, I think people are saying, I yearn for physical connection, but since I can't, let me give you a digital hug, you know, essentially to show that I love you and connect with you.
I don't know whether we will soon forget. You know what I mean? So now you've got like Anthony Fauci saying, okay, I'm not going to shake anybody's hands post-COVID-19. But I think human beings have extremely short-term memories. And I'm just saying, in the future, when we really have herd immunity and we've got COVID-19 under control, you know, people forget things very soon. And I wonder whether touch is one of those inherent senses in our DNA, in our genes. It's almost part of us, right, where it's like breathing, eating, sleeping, things that come quite naturally.
Yes.
Whether we will revert. But now we're just so caught up in this, like, oh, let's not get sick. Let's not pass it on to anyone.
That's right.
It's dangerous. Let's do our part.
Whether it embeds into the culture is a big question, because in Asia, actually, touch isn't really a big way of introducing ourselves. We bow, we greet.
Yes.
But in Europe, you know, they kiss on both cheeks. There's a bit of the more physical touch. I wonder whether that shapes the culture. But bringing it closer to home, personally, I see actually those that I can touch with, I'm actually projecting that on those I'm close to.
Yes.
So, for example, with my mom now, she will actually bless me before I go to work, but using my using her hands, because she's missing that physical touch in other areas.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's manifesting it on those closest to her. And even I do that, right? I tend to hug her more. I tend to rub her back more, because I also miss that.
Yes.
And I'm just manifesting it to those closest to me and those who I can.
Which is my point exactly, is inherent within us, right?
Yes,
so I don't think it'll ever go away, but whether it evolves is the question. And then with your friends, that's another kind of interaction, right? I think, especially, is it fair for me to say, I notice especially younger people, they're quite huggy by nature. It's a cultural thing. Maybe, I don't know, somebody's going to crucify me for saying that. So will how they greet change? It's a question mark, right? And even now, when I go home, Because I work, I'm out there, and then when I see my parents, I have these reservations about hugging them. And for me, I do want COVID-19 to just go away, you know, go away so that I can go back to greeting my loved ones the way I like. You know?
That's right.
I miss, actually, at the end of the day. But let us know what you think. Is touch one of those things you've missed the most in COVID-19? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll have some messages for you, but keep it here at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Could You Be Loved by Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Of course you could be loved. You will always be loved.
Yeah, It's true. I think everyone needs to have that message, right?
Yes.
Especially in this COVID-19 era. Anyway, it's just gone past 6:19 in the morning. It's Thursday and the 4th of March. And somewhat a little bit sad, but I think very real and very true of these times is even though you could be loved, you can't help yourself, but maybe get immersed in all the bad news out there.
Before that, right, they've added this, I just want to say with my nephew, he's learned two new words, scroll and scan.
How old is he?
At the age of 4, he goes around, can I scan this and can I scroll this?
The scanning is because of the My Sajatra app,
exactly.
And the scrolling is because he just is on some gadget every day.
Absolutely. So that's the new lexicon now for nephews under 5 years old.
Okay. I saw this thing, this very cute thing in a shop the other day. I think the boy was like 2 or 3, barely walking. And he walked towards a TV and tried to flick it like an iPad. So children do the most, they pick up all these things, right?
Yes.
And like you say, it's related to the doom scrolling article that's correct. In front of us. And it's by BBC Work Life. And it says the dark, soothing compulsion of doom scrolling, and it asks the question, why does endless looking for bad news feel so strangely gratifying, and can we break the habit? But I would say, come out and say, I'm addicted. I do it, and maybe it's because it's related to work. You know, I feel like I need to know what's happening in the world before I go to sleep because we come in so early in the morning and we need to report everything, anything that's critical. But to me, it's not soothing. It's upsetting.
Actually, I had this problem also when I started, you know, doing this morning gig, right?
Oh, thanks, Philip. We're a gig, but yeah.
Because I also did that, like, okay, let me read the news before and then go to sleep. But I knew I couldn't sleep well.
Mm.
So then my strategy now is, okay, I'm going to sleep early. I don't know what's happening in the world.
And it's not like it's going to be able to change anything, right?
Absolutely. And wake up earlier at 3:30 a.m. and then just read all the news to be prepared.
Yeah, because apparently for some people, so I don't know who these people are who feel better, but apparently they feel better because they feel the feeling of safety in knowledge. And this is according to the article, especially during difficult times. And it's also the design of social media platforms, you know, so it's constantly being refreshed, right? So you're in this little chase within yourself to make sure that you're on top of the news, you know, the latest thing, right? The most important thing. And of course, that human fascination of things when it goes wrong, like a car crash. You can't help but, you know, of course, Malaysians are like, hey, what's the number? Got 40 number.
Correct.
You know,
that's
our bad little habit. But it's true. It's like when things go wrong, you can't like, you're forced, you're mesmerized to look, right?
And they want to predict what the future is like. Because they just want to be able to forecast, okay, with all this information I know now, I can anticipate what's going to happen in the next moment.
Okay, so,
right?
But that's negative about this is that what I, and the article highlights it is that, you know, beyond this, studies do show that, you know, all this actually leads to probably more anxiety and depression because we're spending way, 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 way too much time on all our gadgets, be it the computer, be it the smartphone, all that is feeding our, you know, our depression and anxiety. And because we're stuck at home, we're not really encouraged to go out, right? We're not really encouraged to spend time outside. I mean, when we're talking like malls or in restaurants, you know, do whatever you need to do, do it quickly and then come home.
Yeah.
I mean, go for your walks and all that. But it's not like the life we used to where we would lepak, you know, the lepak culture, say goodbye to it for the moment. Lepak at home.
So good point, right? I think there are two ways of approaching it. One is, do I put a limit to how much feed I access? So there are many apps out there for you to limit your access, right? To, let's say, okay, you can't do more than 15 minutes at a time, so on and so forth. But I've had that before and I dismantled it because I was annoyed, irritated.
Yeah, I have this time limit so-called thing I put on my phone which stops at 9 p.m. Guess what? I just undo the limit.
You undo and disable it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I just press the button again and then I just continue.
That's right.
So it doesn't really work. It
doesn't work. So there's one path. The other path is to change your feed.
Okay.
And that's the reverse, which is joy scrolling.
Joy scrolling. So you look for the stories that make you happy.
Right. So basically what happened is your feed will be full of sunrises and sunsets with inspirational words saying that everything will be great and it'll be amazing.
That's so not me, Philip. That's so not me because I couldn't in the first place even create the feed. I'll be like, this is not me. What
so
is this?
Fake.
Yeah, this is not me. You know, yeah. I want the real stuff. I want to know how markets closed, what stocks are going up and down, how is US going to open, you know,
but the
before
key
I go to
then
bed.
Is to diversify and balance your feed. Okay. I guess that's what they're trying to say, that you can't just have one set of information.
Can I give the ultimate tip?
Sure.
Just turn the phone off. How about that? Turn the phone off. Have the discipline to turn the phone off maybe 1 hour, 1.5 hours before you go to bed. Switch off. And I'm saying switch off in the sense that maybe go back to old-fashioned habits like reading. You know, and read, of course, read something that you enjoy, that is relaxing.
It has worked, you know. For me, turning off my phone 30, 45 minutes before and actually printing articles, I know, and reading it, I sleep much better and sound.
I agree. I have to have this internal kind of discipline to flip the phone over. Literally, you know, because if somebody sends me a message or I see a light, somehow I'm attracted to it like a kid in a candy store, right? I flip it over and I say, enough, the blue light is bad for you. And go back to reading. So go back and enjoy, even if it's a little bit more heavy reading like The Economist. I still, like you say, when it's in print, it's a different feel, right? And your mind, I think somehow a little bit more time to reflect. Yeah. Not so anxious, not so worried about the world. And then you kind of accept, okay, this is what I can do today and I'll leave it there.
I love reading heavy stuff because it's bordering boring. So I tend to fall asleep much faster.
Okay, so...
So do read theoretical heavy stuff.
Okay, but let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Have you been guilty of doom scrolling?
Or too much joy scrolling?
Or too much joy scrolling. Is that your new addiction? But up next, we have the news bulletin. And to take us there is Stop Dragging My Heart Around by Stevie Nicks and Tom Petty. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. This is Xiaoning and I'm here with Philip on The Morning Run. And that was Any Way You Want It by Journey. It has just gone past 6:40 in the morning. And before we get into some of the international headlines, I would actually like to read some of our messages from our listeners. So Ro wrote in and said, by the way, Ro, it's been a while. How are you? But anyway, he wrote in and he said, you rave about human touch and how you miss it. But by far, as humans, the thing we touch most are our phones.
And how that connects with doom scrolling.
Yeah, and somehow it was related. So the human touch was actually the first story this morning, right? That's where we talked about, you know, that was probably something we don't think about, but we pretty much miss in COVID-19. And the second story, ironically, was doom scrolling about our addiction to our gadgets, right? As we keep flicking things up and looking at the next sad piece of news. And Ro has connected both together, actually.
wrong type of touch.
Wrong type of touch. And then we had another listener, Arya Ratnam, who wrote in and says that human touch in our lives is the basis of our civilization. Love and compassion with feelings of touch is what life is all about. Anything less is just not being human.
I agree with him. He's poo-pooing Aristotle.
And it's true. It's something that is probably, I think, inherent in our DNA, in our genes, right? We reach out to touch somebody when we want to get close, when we want to feel that connection. So, as usual, do let us know what you think. You can always Twitter in at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or on any of the topics that we've discussed. But now moving on to international headlines. It was Budget Day in the UK. That was probably yesterday. I'm not sure whether they've ended. It's midnight, I guess, or going to be midnight very soon, 11 p.m. Anyway, the budget was announced and the prospect of more government spending continues to support financial markets. So I think European stocks are expected to do well this morning as city traders also prepare for today's, as city traders also welcome the prospect of Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus package making it through Congress soon. So a lot of budgets going on. Now, Chancellor Rishi Sunak, by the way, who is, you know, there are a lot of, bookmakers in UK.
He's the next.
Yes, and then he's tipped to be the next PM, right? And this is his second budget. He's the wonder kid, 40 years old, by the way. 40 years old, came from Wall Street, went to an Ivy League university.
And also closely connected to the Mittal
family. Yeah, because he married one of their relatives, right? But anyway, he pledged to do whatever it takes to help businesses and people through the pandemic. adding to the £280 billion of support already spent since the crisis began. So this will include a six months extension to the UK job retention scheme until the end of September, because they rolled out a very ambitious furlough scheme, right? They called it that. So workers will continue to be guaranteed 80% of their salary for a further 3 months after the government hopes to have lifted restrictions in June, with the scheme slowly only then being phased out. Now, what's interesting is, as a result of all this, UK apparently is going to get into 407, if I'm not wrong, billion pounds of debt. And everyone's going to be questioning, how is Rishi Sunak going to pay the bill?
I think that's going to be a huge bill. But you know, one thing to give credit to Rishi Sunak is that he actually launched a whole bunch of innovative schemes. So the one that was quite well known was his go out and spend at restaurants incentive. I think last year, where he basically gave checks or kind of vouchers for people to go and eat outside.
Yes, and it did help a lot of small businesses.
What is good is that I think the UK linking to the budget was a week ago, Boris Johnson had laid out a very clear framework in terms of when they would get out of lockdown, right, with clear conditions. And I think by May or June, they expect nearly like herd immunity levels to come through and travel to take place, I think in anticipation of summer travel. So I think many people have lauded Boris Johnson in being able to have clarity over his exit plan. Of course, there are a lot of caveats around that. But we must remind ourselves that UK really has also suffered one of the worst cases of the COVID infection.
Yes, I think there are questions about the management of it in the early days, There were a lot of deaths. But it's not all, you know, roses, because when you look at taxation, because at the end of the day, right, when you're so ambitious in terms of rolling out fiscal stimulus and being so generous with furlough schemes, ultimately you're going to be... You know, there are going to be questions about how you're going to fund it all. So corporate tax in the UK will rise to 25% in 2023 from 19%. Rishi Sunak said that it's still one of the lowest among the group's seven major economies, so they can afford it. So I think it's not entirely, I mean, at the end of the day, you want to be generous, but you've got to balance it with some sort of fiscal responsibility, right? And thinking about the deficit, which apparently after all this will swell towards £355 billion in tax this year. So I think they're really thinking, okay, looking ahead, how are we going to fill up our coffers again, right?
Yep. And I wonder out loud, how will Brexit affect the nature of the budget? We already saw early this year where a lot of fund flows were moving out from London into Europe.
Yes.
I know there's a lot of conversation about equivalence between London and Europe in terms of it being a continued financial hub, but that's still not yet firm and clear yet.
Well, he did publish an independent review into UK stock market listing rules as part of an effort to bolster the City of London post-Brexit, because we already saw Amsterdam taking some of the limelight away from UK.
Yes.
So in the long run, how is that going to affect the UK's economy? But this is something we'll be covering tomorrow. So do tune in at 7:30 to find out a deeper dive on the UK budget. I think that's going to be quite an interesting call. But give us your thoughts as usual. Like I said earlier, you can WhatsApp us or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and, of course, online portals. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Where Did Your Heart Go Missing by Rooney. I hope it's still in your chest. It has just gone past 6:51 in the morning, Thursday, 4th of March. Sorry, that was so corny, but I couldn't help myself.
I don't think they meant literal heart.
I know. It's just me, la, being the practical Chinese woman. I'm like, it's still there, right? Hopefully still beating away. But in the meantime, right, we're having a look at, of course, the front pages of our newspapers. Now, in front of me is the Malaysian Reserve. Normally, Philip hogs it, but I got it for a change today.
I just gave her because I gave her a chance this time.
Okay. Anyway, the front page calls out to me because it says EPF withdrawal trend raises call for retirement reform. And it's time to see beyond the EPF being the dominant retirement fund for the population. And guess what? This is almost exactly the call we had with Lawrence Todd 2 days ago. On this, I think it was on the Tuesday, and you can listen to that podcast on Spotify or on the BFM app or however you get your podcast. And I think it's so true. It brings home the reality that not enough people have savings. And when they retire, some people end up with almost nothing. And I think we shouldn't just rely on EPF as the only way to help people.
If you say that again carefully, right, it's actually a targeted at retirement only. The challenge we had with Lawrence's call was that EPF is being stretched not only to manage retirement, but broader social protection issues before even retirement comes through. So this is a call even to say, look, even if you focus the mandate of EPF to do retirement, even that may not be sufficient to meet our full retirement requirements. That's another question altogether.
I think the whole framework, it's not just EPF, the whole framework of social protection. So we're talking about health insurance or universal health care. EPF being one of them. Access to cash, you know, benefits if you're of immediate need. All that has to be kind of relooked, right? What's the best way to reach out to the right people, the targeted approach, right?
Yes.
Rather than just a blanket withdrawal. Is that the way to go, for example?
Yeah, you make a very good point where our economy is evolving so much. And then for us, where we are blessed that we actually have an employer who is contributing, so on and so forth. Imagine the gig workers.
Yes.
Which was the conversation we had, I think, a day ago.
Yes, with Neil Omar from the centre, where she addressed that, are we giving any protection to gig workers? Because the number of gig workers is just only going to increase year on year. I mean, the nature of work has changed. People do not want, some people do not want to do full-time work, or some people have no option. They are not able to get full-time work, right? And I think the reality is so true, because you just have to look on the streets, look on the roads, and you can see how many Grab, Foodpanda, Bungkus, you name it, Lala Move drivers there are out there. It was not the case about a year ago. Of course, COVID-19 has accelerated this trend. Don't get me wrong, but the trend is here to stay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What else has caught your eye, Philip?
Okay, I'm going to the Star, and in the Star Biz special, the hoteliers Lord Move to relax international borders. That caught me by surprise because, you know, we've been having a lot of debates about inter-district, interstate. Now, this is on the back of MIDA launching its Malaysia Safe Travel Portal, which contains information and advisory services to facilitate business travellers' entry into Malaysia. Now, there's a whole slew of requirements. Mm. We won't go through those in detail. But if you've got the time, and I know many of our listeners are very interested about how they need to get experts into the country, do check out the Safe Travel Portal on MIDA if you want to understand what are the requirements for business travellers to come into Malaysia.
Okay. I mean, that's a bit of good news there, I guess, in the economy recovering.
Just a small one on good news. Dry days will apparently yield better durians.
But it's been raining, and yesterday apparently there were hailstones. Hailstone storm in KL. Yes, it was on social media. But anyway, I it wasn't in my neighborhood, but I know that it created a bit of havoc. And there was unfortunately some bad accident, or there was an construction mishap along one of the highways in KL, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, that's so right. Unfortunately, I don't know whether there's any casualties as a result.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the CEO, Edge CEO morning brief, and it's about Putrajaya settling with Deloitte for $324 million in relation to the 1MDB scandal. So earlier on, we saw MBank being fined $2.38 million, and now we have Deloitte with $324 million. Now, I'm just wondering who else is next. Are there going to be any other corporates or even individuals being forced to cough up money for their involvement in a 1MDB scandal, which is something we will be asking P. Gunasegaran later on, who is the consultant editor of The Vibes, about what he thinks about these fines and, you know, maybe
whether
a little bit
fair.
And a little bit update maybe on the current trials that are ongoing.
Yeah, on just a separate note, just quickly following that, Bukit Aman is investigating Zeti's husband for allegedly receiving 1MDB funds
and
as Zeti well.
Zeti here being the ex-Bank Negara governor.
And current PNB chairman.
Yes,
chairwoman.
And current PNB chairman. But as usual, do let us know what you think. If there are any of these stories that are of interest, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. But that's all from the local papers we have for you this morning. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by, of course, more business news and analysis, where we'll find out where global markets are heading, which is because there was a bit of a meltdown yesterday, with Tony Nash of Complete Intelligence. But first, here's Baby Mine by Thelma Houston. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.